You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A group of editors, literary scholars, critics, and writers got together to make a list of some of the most influential and important American fiction books from the past century. The result is the Great American Novels List, published by The Atlantic a couple few weeks back. It's an expansive list of 136 novels from a wide range of authors and genres, starting in 1925 and ending in 2023. One of the project editors joins us now for a behind-the-scenes look at what went into making this list and to offer some reading recommendations inspired by the project. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What novels from the past century would you put on your list if you made something like this? Did you read any novels in high school or college that have stuck with you? What made them so special? Have you read any new fiction books lately that you think will stand the test of time, American or otherwise? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Ellen Cushing is a senior editor at The Atlantic, one of the lead editors of the Great American Novels Project. Ellen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Great could mean a lot of things to a lot of people. What was great in the context of coming up with this list of 136 novels?
I love this question. I've been getting it a lot.
I bet.
And I should say, like, look, this is, of course, subjective.
Sure.
You could have 100 geniuses make their own version of this list and you get 100 different lists. But for us, what we were looking for was, you know, force of ideas, like novels that had something to say about the world in some way. Beautiful prose, that is obviously very important. Unforgettable characters. And we were also really looking for books that did something new or surfaced a new way of thinking about things, like that were sort of significant in addition to being great reads. So if a book hit all of four of those boxes, it was very likely to get on our list.
And somebody might hear this concept and think this is all going to be highfalutin literary fiction. And I think there's some of that here, but there are genres, there's science fiction, there's a Stephen King horror. You were casting a wider net than, say, maybe an academic list of great novels might be.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, one of the reasons that this project was so fun is that, like, our understanding of literary greatness is so much more capacious than it used to be. Even when I was in high school 20 years ago, there was a pretty set list of books that were considered the canon. And now we understand greatness to take a lot of different forms. So we have a couple graphic novels, we have some children's books, we have a lot of sci-fi, we have a lot of noir mystery type books. You know, these are not exclusively like giant doorstop novels about war and peace written by like white guys. You know, it's a much, and we have some of those, don't
sure.
worry. But it's a really diverse list in across all different vectors.
I think weirdly, one of the things I like the most is that you came up with 136. You know, a lot of times we go top 100 or a nice round number. You assembled the collection, it sounds like, and then found what number you were at, which I love.
Yes. It drives me crazy when I read a list that's like 100 or 500 or God forbid 1,000, because I'm just desperate to know what the 101st was. And so we just decided, like, look, no one's making us stick to a certain number. Let's just come up with the books that we think should be on this list, and that's the list. So it turned out it was 136.
Talking to Ellen Cushing from The Atlantic about the Great American Novels Project. You could join in at 800-642-1234. American novels from last 100 years. You can join in with your favorites at 800-642-1234. Let's start naming names, Ellen. The oldest on the list, not a huge surprise, I guess, The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Can you talk about kicking off this time span with a pretty big name there?
You know, it's a classic for a reason. It's a really, really good book. And, you know, there were a lot of books like this, you know, I would consider also like The Grapes of Wrath, you know, books that a lot of people read in high school or college. And it was really important to us to not just assume that those books deserve to be on the list because we've all been talking about them for so long. So we actually revisited these books. I read the first, I don't know, 60 pages of The Great Gatsby to refresh my memory. And it's a great book with so much to say. So I'm really proud that we have that on the list first. From the same year, we also have An American Tragedy, which is a book that I had not heard of before we put it on the list. And then we have this, you know, like surrealist sort of like very dense, I think it's like 1,000-page Gertrude Stein novel. So it's already like even as far back as 1925. We have a lot of different kinds of books.
And you mentioned The Grapes of Wrath. You wrote the blurb for that one. Steinbeck, John Steinbeck, wrote a couple few novels himself. Why The Grapes of Wrath on the list in particular?
We were really stuck between The Grapes of Wrath and East of Eden. Because they're honestly both really, really, really great American novels. But we decided to go for The Grapes of Wrath mostly because it really innovated in its moment. You know, this was a time when a lot of Steinbeck's contemporaries, like other novelists, were really interested in kind of like glamorous, coastal, beautiful people and their problems. And Steinbeck was interested in writing books about real people in, you know, experiencing the sort of like biggest struggles of his moment. And that was, you know, the climate crisis of the Dust Bowl and westward migration. And he was really interested in human suffering. And that's pretty, it was radical in its moment. And we wanted to recognize that significance.
Now, Ellen, maybe you can help me with some personal advice here. I like to read a lot. I've read some of the books on the list. I haven't read a lot of the books. Somewhere in my reading career, I got allergic to the word should. Like in my head, like, I haven't read that great book. I should read it. And once I start thinking that way, it's like, oh, so now it's a chore. I'm never going to read it. How do I break out of that and read these great books without that? I don't know. Maybe this is just me. I don't know. How do I get out of that should mindset?
I mean, I think that like no one should be in the should mindset. I hear that from people all the time, people that I work with, people that I've met talking about this, you know, so many times over the last couple of weeks talking about this project, I hear people say, and they sort of have this kind of like guilty expression on their face, like, oh, I really should read that, you know? And my answer is like, no, you shouldn't. Only read it if you want to. Like, this is supposed to be for pleasure. Like, we're not in school anymore. No one's making us read these books. You should read this book if it grabs onto you and if you love it. My friend's mom is in a book club where their rule is that you take your age and you subtract it from 100, and that is the number of pages you need to read of a novel before you are allowed to give up on it. I love that because it's true that we shouldn't, no one should be wasting their time on something that doesn't bring them joy. Like, reading is for pleasure. And the older you get, like, the more important it is to just abandon the should. So I guess I didn't really answer your question. I'm not helping you.
Oh, no, that actually helped a lot.
I'm giving you permission to not, don't read a book if you don't love it.
Excellent. I love it. Now, let's move in another direction now. There's a Stephen King book on the list, and I could see some great American fiction list saying, Stephen King, you know, that's popular literature or whatever, not going to touch it. There he is. The Stand is on the list. Can you talk about the inclusion of your Stephen Kings of the world?
I'm so glad you mentioned The Stand because I had not read it before this project. I have not read all 136 books. I'm coming clean now. I had not read it before this project, but I just started it. And I love it. It is so, so much more interesting, so much more layered than my perception of it. I thought it was Stephen King. It's the Carrie guy. It's going to be scary. It's going to be sort of obvious. It's so rich. It's so layered. It's so complex. It is absolutely a great American novel. Like, it absolutely stands up against all of these other books. And, you know, I think one of the great things about genre is that if you sort of take the reader out of the world that they live in. You know, we have some books that do not take place on planet Earth because they're sci-fi, or take place in a kind of post-apocalyptic speculative version of Earth. And doing that really puts the reality of life on Earth or in America into sharp relief. Like, I think it's a really genius way to kind of examine this country and its problems and what it's like to be alive from a little bit of a distance. So I think these books absolutely belong on here.
Ellen Cushing is with us, senior editor at The Atlantic. We're talking about The Atlantic's new Great American Novels list. It includes 136 novels published over the last century, including familiar classics, recent favorites, overlooked gems along the way. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. If you got to pick a couple few slots on the list, what would you put there? Let us know about it. Have we been talking about some of your favorites so far? Is there one that you think gets overlooked, maybe unfairly, for one reason or another? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Ellen Cushing from The Atlantic about what went into making their new Great American Novels list and a great list of suggestions for books we can check out. You can join in at 800-642-1234. I know we've got at least a few readers out there. How do you decide which new or classic book to read next? Do you look at literary prizes, best of lists, or do you have favorite people in your life that you like to get recommendations from? What would you put on your list of great American novels and why? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Can you talk about some of the diversity on this list? There's a wide variety of perspectives on what it means to experience life in America. Ellen, how did you try to capture that?
You know, we did not go into this project wanting to hit a certain quota, but you'll see as you go through the list of books chronologically, it starts out with a lot of, you know, like white men in their 30s and 40s, and then white American born men in their 30s and 40s. And then it kind of expands in a lot of different ways. So, you know, later on in the list, we have the book, A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James, who's born in Jamaica. Like, we have a lot of people who are sort of similar to this idea that like sci-fi or genre helps us see our world in a clearer way. I think that having, you know, immigrant writers who are writing about America with the, you know, fresh perspective of someone who did not grow up here, that's so important. And I think these books, some of those books are so insightful and, you know, like it's just so important to see that stuff. And, you know, we looked at diversity in all kinds of different ways. Like, we have books that are really short and really long, and we have books that's absolutely huge, just the sort of idea of what a great American novel should look like. And then we have Watchmen, which is, a graphic novel written by a pair of British men who were writing about a sort of alternative version of the U.S. after the Cold War, you know? So, like, if you told your grandfather that was going to be on a list of the great American novels, he'd probably be shocked. But as soon as we started talking about it, it just felt right.
Now, you were part of this process. A lot of people were. Was there a book or two that you really went to bat for, or would have if people hadn't put it on the list? What did you really want to see end up there?
So the book that I wish I'd fought harder for, don't laugh, is Gone Girl. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I mentioned it sort of as a joke, and we didn't really revisit it. And the more I thought about it, the more I have thought about it since the list came out. Gone Girl was the first example of a kind of book that has been imitated so much that it's almost hard to see its impact. Like, the narrative structure, the big twist, the voice of the narrators, all of these things are things that you see in so many of like the most interesting and most popular books now. But Gone Girl did it first, and then like it did it so well that it was imitated so much so fast that we all kind of forgot that Gillian Flynn did it first. So, and you know, that's a book, speaking of diversity, that like people I think kind of think of as a sort of genre book or maybe kind of an airport book. It, you know, it was made into a movie, and I don't know that people think of it as a great American novel, but I think it kind of is. I think it has a lot going on.
I haven't read it. I read a short story by the author that blew me away for some of the reasons you just said. So that I will put that on my should
it's
fun
great.
In the fun way list. Awesome.
Oh, you'll have so much fun with it.
Excellent.
It's great.
Let's bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Jenny is with us in West Allis. Jenny, hi. What did you want to bring up?
Hi. Yeah, this is amazing. I just wanted to say that what brought me to reading and back to it maybe is going back to like that first book that just said, yeah, you know what? This is super cool. And my book was, oh my gosh, I just lost it.
I think you told our producer it was Harriet the Spy. Yeah. I hope they weren't lying to me.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that. It was, oh my gosh, I feel like an idiot right now. No, it was, Harriet the Spy and then Charlotte's Web.
Ah, okay. There we got it. Jenny, thanks. I'm glad you thought of it. And Charlotte's Web is one of the three children's books on the list, Ellen.
Yes. Charlotte's Web is very special to us at The Atlantic because E.B. White wrote an essay about a pig that kind of sat in his brain for a little while. And he wrote this essay for The Atlantic, and then he wrote kind of a fiction version that turned out to be Charlotte's Web. So we love E.B. White at The Atlantic. We love Charlotte's Web. I'm so proud that we have it on there. I think it's a very, very rich, layered book that gets at a lot of really big themes, even though it's sort of packaged as a children's book. And Harriet the Spy is an amazing book. I used to, I really wanted to be her for many, many years of my life. We talked about it for this project, and I don't remember exactly why we didn't keep it on, but it's a great pick. It is absolutely one of those books that made me fall in love with reading when I was a little kid.
And thanks again for that call, Jenny. Another one for younger readers, Judy Blume. I mean, in my generation, Judy Blume was huge. You've got Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. I can see why that one ended up on the list. Talk about that a little bit.
It's a really special book for a lot of reasons. It is one of these. It came out in 1970, and it is still a book that you want your kids to read. You know, my son is 18 months right now, so like his favorite novel is Where Is the Dog? But I hope that eventually, when, you know, in 15 years, I can give him Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, and it will unlock something inside of him. Like, this is a book about belonging and about family and about growing up and about who you are, and it's about religious faith, and it's about what adulthood really means, and it's about living in a body. There's so much to it, and I'm really proud that we have it on there.
Talking to Ellen Cushing, senior editor at The Atlantic, talking about their Great American Novels Project, 136 books from over the last 100 years. Ellen, what are you hoping people do with this list now? What are you hoping people take away from it?
I'm hoping that people never feel like they don't know what to read again. I think that what I wanted was for people to bookmark this list and return to it whenever they're kind of standing paralyzed in the bookstore and don't know what to get. I know I will be returning to it. I've heard from a lot of people who are trying to read every book on the list. As you have heard, I don't want anyone to feel like this is a homework assignment, but if you want to take that on, that's amazing. Please email me when you finish. I'll buy you a beer or something. I hope that people, look at this list, think about it, think about what greatness means, and find a really great read.
Now, when you put out a list like this, sometimes people take it as fighting words. Are you getting a lot of hopefully good-natured questions like, where is so-and-so an author? Or why'd you pick that book instead of that book by a particular author?
We sure are. and, you know, that's been a joy because it's so nice to hear from other readers and to hear from people who have really, really strong feelings about the books they love. So, you know, I think that people sometimes have felt a little bit sheepish complaining, and that's great. Like, this is subjective. I was never under the impression that like we were right and everybody else is wrong. And if you want to come up to me and talk to me about, you know, this is a big one, is Pynchon Gravity's Rainbow versus Crying of Lot 49. We thought it through. We put Crying on the list. I'm feel very confident in that decision. But if a Gravity's Rainbow super fan wants to talk to me about Gravity's Rainbow and why they love it, like, that's a great conversation for me to have.
And Ellen, you mentioned based on this, you're reading The Stand. You're just a little bit into it. Anything else that came up in this project that instantly shot to the top of your haven't read but want to read list?
Oh, there are so many. I can't decide what I'm going to read after I read The Stand. Just a few that come to mind. There was this book called Family Life by Akhil Sharma from a few years ago that my colleague Gal Beckerman wrote about. It's a book about a pair of brothers, and it seems like it's a book about kind of how you sort of break and then repair a family. It sounds really, really great. There are a couple of books that I haven't read since high school that I would like to reread. So Giovanni's Room, I read, you know, almost 20 years at this point, and I am really, really excited to jump back into it. I feel very, very lucky to have been so close to this, and I'm genuinely overwhelmed about what I'm going to read after The Stand. The Stand is like 1300 pages.
Right. You're
so
set for a while.
Minute. Yeah.
Ellen, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you.
That's Ellen Cushing, senior editor at The Atlantic. We've been talking about The Atlantic's newly published list of great American novels. Some classics there, surprises, lots of options to add to your stack of books to read. Keep sharing your favorites. Email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up Monday on Central Time, private equity and other companies are getting into the nursing home and senior care business. We'll ask the question, what does it mean when senior facilities are run as for-profit enterprises? That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.